Well, good morning, church. So today's an exciting day. As you've seen, if you've looked to the left and the right, if you're in the room, we have banners, and we're going to talk about what we're going to do the next few years. If you're at home, you'll see those in just a minute. I thought a lot about how I wanted to intro today. My plan A was I was hoping that someone could roll me up in one of the banners and that somehow I could come out of that. But that didn't happen, and that's probably good that that did not happen. Hey, let me start with this is a statement of truth, and you're going to think it's obvious, but I want you to think about it as we start the message time of our service today. It's easier to know what to do with a day than it is to know what to do with a life. That sounds obvious, and it is obvious in a sense, but it's important to reflect on that truth. It is a lot easier to know what to do with a single day than it is to know what to do with an entire life. When it comes to a day, you can get your head around it. Well, you know you need to eat, so there's going to be a meal or two or three in the day. You know you need to sleep to survive, so at some point in the day, you're going to have to find shelter, you're going to have to find a bed, and you're going to have to go to sleep. And then between those times, you're going to work, you're going to play, you're going to rest, or some nature of those things, and then you have a day. And you might not have every single day be an amazing day, but you've had some days, and you probably went to bed at night and thought, that's a day. That was a good day. A life is a lot harder to figure out. Because when it comes to knowing what to do with a life, we are forced to wrestle with really big questions. Where do you live? Who do you spend time with? Who are your best friends? Who do you date? Who do you marry? What do you believe? Where do you go to church? What's your job? What's your long-term career? Where do you go to school? Like those are really big questions. And they're pretty hard to figure out. And it doesn't necessarily matter if you're young or old or if you're really busy or if you're kind of bored with life. Most of us have to wrestle with that question. What do I do? Like, what do you do with a life? And the truth is, for many of us, because we can't fully wrap our mind around what it means to live a meaningful life, what we do instead is we focus on the small picture and we hope that the big picture works itself out. So I know how to have a good day, so I'll just do that over and over and over and over again and hope that by the end that equals good life. I stay busy and I'm hopeful for the rest. Another way of saying this would be, we all want to be like Jimpa. So Jimpa is a dog, and he's actually one of the more famous dogs in history. So his story goes like this. 1979, his owner's named Warren, lives in Australia. Warren has struggles with his work, and he can't find a job, but he finds a job across town at a farm. And so he actually leaves his city, and he gets in the truck with Jimpa, and he drives to this other city on this farm, and they start working. And there's this day where Warren is out in the fields, he's doing his thing, and Jimpa sees a squirrel, and he starts chasing the squirrel, and Jimpa gets lost. And so Warren, at the end of the day, is like, where's my dog? And it's a good dog, he loves his dog. So Warren actually gets in his truck, and he starts driving around this little farm town, like, where's Jimpa? Yelling out the window, Jimpa, Jimpa, and he's just gone. So he looks for a full day, and then the next day, he's really worried. He looks again, doesn't even work on the farm that day, looks all over, he can't find Jimpa. Finally, after the third day, Warren gives up, Jimpa's gone. Warren does a few more weeks' worth of work on this farm, and then the work's done, and so he drives home. 14 months later, Jimpa shows up at his original home with Warren. Now, it's a good story, but here's the main detail I left out. The distance between those two cities is 2,000 miles. And scientists have no explanation for how Jimpa made it back. Obviously, dogs are good smellers, but even the best-smelling dog in the world doesn't stand on a mountain in California and smell bacon in New York. It just doesn't happen. And yet, that's what Jimpa did, and nobody knows exactly how it happened. Now, if you think about it on a micro level, what's Jimpa doing with his days? Well, he's probably running around on the streets. He's looking for food. He's taking a nap at night. He is just scavenging, trying to survive. And then somehow, some way, 14 months later, he ends up where he is supposed to be. And for many of us, that's the way we live life. well, I don't really know what to do with my life, but I know how to have a good day, so I'm just going to do that over and over and over again, and then hopefully I'll end up somewhere. Andy Stanley has a good line about this. He says that everybody ends up somewhere, but very few people get there on purpose. And there's truth to that. We're all going somewhere, but not everybody's going somewhere on purpose. Another way to describe what I'm talking about is that we're good at having, or we know how to have a good day. We don't know how to have good direction. That's a different thing. Having a primary trajectory to which your life is aimed, that's hard. In fact, if you're average, like if you're just a normal American person, then you're going to change majors 3 times in college. You're going to move every 5 years. You're going to change jobs every 4 years. And you'll get married probably once, maybe twice, and it'll last 8 years. That's if you're normal. Wow, I mean, think about the implications of that. That's just the national averages in the United States of America. So what this means is we are people without direction. Like, yes, we know how to have a good day, but we don't know how to have a good life. We don't really know how to find sustained direction. Now, let me begin a little bit of good news here. When it comes to faith, when it comes to spirituality, God does not give up on directionless people. And that's really good news. Like, you can go to so many stories in the Bible to make this point really, really clear. You can go to someone like Gideon or someone like Moses or someone like Hagar who's out in the desert. You can even go to someone like Peter who betrays Jesus. And so all these people, at least in one season of life, they have this moment where like, I don't know where I'm going. I have no idea what I'm doing. I have no idea what the next chapter in my life is. And God doesn't give up on any of those men or women. Like, he bears with them. God stays on course with people who are off course. And that's really helpful. That's really good news. So if you, like right now, are thinking, yeah, I have no direction in my life, not a clue. Like, I can have a good day, no idea where I'm going in life. That doesn't mean you don't have God. Just because you don't have direction doesn't mean that you don't have God. Because God, he doesn't give up on directionless people. And so, having said all that, I want to give you an anchor text today. Specifically for people, for those of us who are like, I don't know where I'm going. There is an amazing passage. It's found in the Gospel of Luke. It's chapter 21. And this is an anchor passage, not just for like today, not even for the next few weeks. Like this, for some of you, this might need to be your anchor text for the next few years. It's such a powerful sermon from Jesus. It's not one of his most popular sermons. In fact, of all the sermons that Jesus preaches in all the Gospels, this one's probably the least talked about because it's really dark, it's sad, it's scary, it's a little hard to understand, it's apocalyptic, so it's not like Sermon on the Mount. And yet, there are some truths in this sermon which are really, really helpful. Generally speaking, when Jesus gives this sermon in Luke chapter 21, he is predicting the fall of Jerusalem. And so in the big picture, Jesus is saying the temple's going to fall, Romans are going to come in and destroy it, you're going to be persecuted, many of you are going to go to jail, and many of you are going to die. This is a very sobering speech. In fact, just to give you a feel for his language, some of the language is literal. It's like verse 6, not one stone will be left on another. Verse 16, you will be betrayed even by parents, brothers and sisters, relatives and friends. They will put some of you to death. Verse 17, everyone will hate you because of me. Verse 24, Jerusalem will be trampled on. This is very literal language describing the fall of Jerusalem. It's all going to fall apart. People are going to hate you. It's going to be really bad. There are some parts of the speech where Jesus uses apocalyptic language. So it's more metaphorical language to describe the gravity of the situation. So verse 11, there will be fearful events and great signs from heaven. Verse 25, there will be signs in the sun and the moon and the stars. And in that day, this is the language that people of that day used to describe cataclysmic events. And so Jesus is saying it's all going to go down and it's going to be really, really bad. So you talk about a situation in which people or the average person feels like they don't have direction, this would be that situation. Like this speech, this is the end of the road speech, this is the doomsday worst case scenario speech, like every source of security for these people is going to be removed. Temple, friends, family, city, nation, it's all going to be uprooted. And so I want you to imagine what it might have been like to be one of these people listening to this speech. Like this would be devastating. In fact, one way to relate maybe just a little bit to how they felt would be to for me to share with you what Jay Caskew told me a few weeks ago. So he's one of our missionaries. He was here for Mission Sunday in the weeks before and after. And one day at lunch, we were talking, and he said that they have a lot of refugees from Ukraine in their Vienna church, or at least some refugees. And so I said, Jake, what are you learning from these refugees from Ukraine? Like, how are they? And what are you learning about them? And he paused and thought for quite a while, and then he said, they're really sad. They're just sad. Because they don't, at this point, they don't really have a nation. They don't have jobs. They don't have a future to look forward to. They don't have homes. They're just sad. That's probably how people felt when they heard Jesus give this speech. And it's definitely how people felt when these events did happen about 40 years after Jesus predicted that they would happen. And it could be that this is how some of you feel now. Like you showed up at church today and you're barely here, or you're at home watching online and you're just like, yeah, I don't know. It's rough. Like maybe you're a teacher and for the last few years you've taught with a really good friend, and maybe that good friend's not there at your school, and now you're thinking, I don't know how I can teach without my really, really good friend. Maybe there's some health issue that you just found out about in your life and you don't know what to do next and you feel your confidence just tanking. Or maybe you've moved into the city recently and you don't know anybody. And you just feel the sense of helplessness, the sense of loneliness, this lack of direction, like, or a thousand other reasons, but many of you in the room are feeling maybe the way that Jesus' listeners would have been feeling when they heard this speech. Just, yeah, it's all, everything is falling apart. I have no direction in life. And so if you are feeling that way, or even close to feeling that way, or even if you think, yeah, you're not feeling that way right now, but you know that 6 months from now or a year from now, yeah, you're going to be in one of these directionlessness places in life, I want to give you two sentences from Jesus in this sermon, which are so revolutionary, and they're so radical, and they're just so helpful for people that don't have direction, that don't know what to do next. In fact, the first one I'm going to read to you, several years ago, probably 10, 12 years ago, I was super early in ministry, and I was youth minister. I'd only been doing youth ministry for like 6 months, 7 months, and one of the shepherds called me and said, hey, there's been a crisis. One of our members died in a car accident, and I'm going to be with the family, and I want you to come with me. And I said, all right, I'll come with you. And this elder said, I'm going to take the lead, but I want you to come with a verse, just in case they want to hear some encouraging scripture. I want you to come with a verse ready to read. I was like, all right. And so I went to my Bible, and I remember the anxiety I felt. Like, what do you say? Like, what verse do you read when someone's going through the worst moment of their life? Like, what do you read? The verse I'm about to read to you is what I landed on. I read several parts of the Bible, prayed a lot about it, and this verse was so meaningful that this is what I wanted to share with the family. And it happened. I showed up and the elder did the leading. But at one point, 30, 40 minutes in, he said, well, Phil, I'd like you to read a scripture. And this is what I read to that family from this speech in Luke 21. Verse 28, when these things begin to take place, stand up and lift up your heads because your redemption is drawing near. It's a pretty powerful sentence to come in the context of that speech. Notice that Jesus is saying, he's not saying lift up your head when the suffering is over. Like as he describes all these events, this tidal wave of suffering and pain, Jesus does not say, wait for the tidal wave to pass and for the storm to be over and for the flood to recede and then stand on the beach and look at the glory of God and say, praise the Lord. Jesus says, when they happen, like when it starts to come down, like when the stones in the temple are starting to fall and when your friends betray you and when that family member leaves you and when that person you care about passes away, right in the moment, you stand up and you lift up your head because you know that your redemption is drawing near. That's a powerful, powerful command from Jesus Christ. In other words, here's what really strikes at least me about this passage is that lifting your head is an act of faith. We just sang the song, and this is the verse where the song comes from, you're the lifter of my head. Sometimes that's all you can do. Like sometimes there isn't a five-step action plan of what to do next. Sometimes the only thing that you can do in the middle of your pain, in the middle of your storm, is you just look up. It's an act of faith. In fact, just imagine this. Imagine that there's a woman and she's 25 years old and she's standing before Jesus in the year 30 AD when Jesus gives this speech. And she's a young mom, and she's raising her kids, and she's listening to Jesus say that everything's falling apart, the temple's going to be destroyed, and your family's going to abandon you, and everybody's going to hate you, and you're going to be persecuted, and some of you are going to die. And she's thinking, oh, please, don't let this be true. And then fast forward 40 years later, and let's say that she's been a pillar in the church, and that she's supported Paul on his missionary journeys, and that she's been just this great force of good in Jerusalem for all these years. But then the Romans come in, and they set fire to her home, and then they use their horses and their tools and their ropes to start pulling off the stones of the temple, and they capture her husband and take him away. And she's standing in the streets of Jerusalem, hearing the sounds of the hooves and the horses and the ropes and the tools and the screaming of people, and she smells the burning of homes, and her eyes are watering from the atmosphere and the smoke in the air. It's happening. And then imagine that this woman remembers the sermon that Jesus gave 40 years ago. And as she's standing in the streets, all she can do is lift her head. Because she knows that her redemption is drawing near. Sometimes that's all you can do. Sometimes there isn't a 5-year action plan. You just lift your head. Lifting your head is an act of faith. Here's the second thing from this sermon that I find really, really helpful, really powerful. So towards the end, Jesus says this, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. In fact, I want you to read that verse with me. Here we go. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. This sentence from Jesus reveals the transient nature of all reality. Beauty fades, health erodes, people die, trends pass, civilizations perish. But if there is one thing that you can count on to transcend the transient nature of reality, it is the words of God. And specifically in this speech, Jesus is actually referring to his own words. Like they're the one thing that doesn't crumble. So when the temple falls, and when your family breaks apart, and when your daughter passes away, there is something that doesn't fall apart. It's the words of Jesus. You see, the words of Jesus, they have this eternal pastoral power. Long after you have passed away and long after I have passed away, and if the Lord has not come back, other generations will still be fed by the words of Jesus. They're eternal. They have power generation after generation after generation. In fact, I told this story just a few years ago, but I want to tell it again because it's just such a great image of this passage. So after World War II, Warsaw, Poland, was devastated. Most of the city was in ruins. In the downtown section of Warsaw, Poland, most every building had been toppled over. There were pieces of concrete everywhere, shards of glass. Just the whole city was in ruins. And there was one building that stood, and on this building there was a plaque with this verse: "Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away." There is something about the words of Jesus which transcend all time. They don't fade. And so why do I share this particular sermon, this particular passage with you? So here's, let me go back to what I was saying a little bit last week. Last 2 to 3 years of ministry have been rough because we haven't got to think ahead. We haven't got to plan. We've just been in survival mode. And so for the first time in a long time, we've been asking questions, what's next? What does Memorial Road need to do in the next 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years? Like what need in the community do we need to try to fill? Like, who do we want to become? What kind of projects do we want to tackle? Like, we've been talking about that a lot behind the scenes the last few months. We've been praying a lot about that. One of the things that we've heard the most from just you in our conversations as we've been talking, just members, like, what's going on? And maybe I'll just speak from my own experience here for just a minute. The thing that is talked about more than anything else just in our conversations is the anxiety we feel about the world. We talk about it all the time. We feel anxious about what's happening in the world. Now, for some people, it's we are so anxious about the consistent political divide that is not getting better. And it just makes us feel really nervous. Others of us, we feel really anxious about the erosion of ethics or the decay of truth or the persistence of racism or even just the financial situation, inflation, the war in Ukraine. Like there is so much anxiety that we all feel and we all talk about it. So let me ask you a what if here. What if you could develop the habit of turning your anxiety about the world into meditation on the Word? Like, I know that you know that's a good thing and that you probably have moments where you do that, but I'm saying, like, what if this became like an instinct that every time you felt the anxiety, like, what are we going to do? Oh, no. What about this? What about that? The world's falling apart. What if before you even let yourself get to that state of panic, you could turn to the words of Christ? Like, what if that just became an instinct? Like, that's just what you did. And what if you did that year after year after year? Like, what kind of person would you become? That's actually pretty cool to think about. Like, you would become this peaceful, calm, wise person. You would become the oasis that other people need in this world. Now, take it a step further. Imagine if all of us started doing that. Like, if every single one of us developed this instinct to take the anxiety we feel about the world and translate it into meditation on the words of Jesus Christ, this church would become an oasis for fragmented, divided, stressed out people. So we started thinking about this, and so here's the journey I want to invite you on for the next 6 years. We actually want to try that. I want to invite you on a 6-year journey to be the people where the words of Jesus actually intersect with and cut off the anxiety of the world. Like, can you imagine what this church would be like if we really did this? And so here's what all these banners mean. In fact, I'm going to do something. I don't know if I've ever done this. I'm actually going to take a tour around the room so you can just see what all these banners are, and I'm going to explain what we're going to do the next few years. So starting next week, we're going to launch in a year one next week. So every banner represents a command from Jesus, direct commands. So it's six direct commands from the Gospels. And so next week, we're starting with listen to my voice. And I'm pretty fired up about next week. Because this is like last 2 months of my life, I have been saturating myself in like all the fun literature about how did we get the Bible and how do we like how do we think through Genesis and science and all those kinds of questions. We're launching into that next week, and we're going to spend the whole year on those questions, and then also just the what's the big sweeping story of the Bible. That's we're starting that next week, and we're going to do a whole year on that. Listen to my voice. Then the following year, we're going to do Follow Me, which in some ways is the most difficult thing Jesus ever said to anybody. Follow me, like take up your cross, follow me. Like what does that even mean? Like more than you being a bank executive or a teacher or a nurse or a stay-at-home mom, like you're a disciple. And sometimes we lose sense of what that even means. So a year from now, we're going to focus on this. How do you follow Christ? And then I'm really excited about this year. So this is actually the first year we planned. When we started thinking about what do we want to do the next 6 years, we thought, okay, what happens in the fall of 2024? You know what happens? It's the next presidential election. So what word of Jesus do we need in the next presidential election? We need this word, love one another. Like, wouldn't it be cool if we could be the church that became the safe place, the oasis that the world desperately needs when everybody's freaking out and everybody's hating each other? Like, what if we became the church that, yeah, we're the church that we're informed about what's going on in the world, but we're going to practice this command to love one another. And specifically, we're also going to learn how to love our enemies that year. That's year three, which I'm really excited about. Now, year four, if you're still with us here, and I hope you're with us, we're going to do Believe in Me. So this is from John chapter 14, this particular quote from Jesus. And this is critical. Like, this is where many, many, many people are in their life. Like, right now, you're like, I think I believe. You're like the guy in Mark 9, like, I want to believe. Help me overcome my unbelief. I mean, this is critical. And so this year, we're going to hit all the big questions. How do you believe in God? How do you, you know, reconcile the Bible with evolution? How do you deal with pain and suffering, the problem of evil? Like, and not just the intellectual questions, but also the embodiment. Like, what does it mean to practice belief, to practice faith? How do you raise kids with a resilient faith? That's that year. The next year is another quote from John, abide in me. And this is where Jesus says, if you want to produce fruit in your life, you've got to stay connected to the branch. And so when we are connected to the Lord through prayer and through meditation, through spiritual disciplines, which we talked about in the past, that's where fruit comes. And then the final year is this very, very famous statement from Jesus at the end of Matthew, go and make. And so what would it look like this year to go all out to make disciples in the world? And so, in fact, we're already thinking about this year. So if you've been with this church family for any length of time, you might know, or if you don't know, so long time ago, back in like 2007, we sent out a bunch of people on short-term missions, like 1,000 people. In 2018, we sent 2,000 people out in a year in short-term missions. So we're already thinking that last year, we want to send more people than we've ever sent in the history of this church on short-term missions into the world. Like, we want to go. And you also need to know that between all these themes, as we're working through all this, I mean, that's not the only thing we're going to be doing. Like, we're starting to dream about, okay, what are our next big projects? What big kingdom initiatives do we want to, like, take to the next level in the city? What kingdom initiatives do we want to start? What's our vision for church planting? And, like, there's a lot going on. And the main thing that I want you to hear is, like, the reason we're doing this word meets world, is because a lot's going to change in the next 6 years. A lot's going to change. Like, some of you, you're going to graduate. Some of you are going to get your first job. Some of you are going to get fired. Some of you are going to get promoted. Some of you are going to get married. Some of you are going to get divorced. A lot of you are going to move. Some of you are going to go through a really, really bad breakup. Some of you are going to lose somebody that you never thought you would lose. There's going to be a lot of change. A lot of change in the world in the next 6 years. But the one thing that's not going to change is the words of Jesus. And so I want you to think about, like, what would your life look like if you actually, like, went all in on this effort? Like, I'm going to make the words of Jesus my own for 6 years. Like, I'm telling you, you will become a different, better kind of person. There's a lot of wisdom in remaining true to the word of the Lord. So when I go speak at places, I'll often get asked, you know, tell us about yourself and where'd you grow up and all that. And I tell people, well, I actually preach at the church that I grew up in, and I went to school across the parking lot at Oklahoma Christian. And sometimes people give me this very subtle look, and the look is, oh, like that's not good, or that's not right. And so for years, I've actually hesitated telling that part of my story when I go to speak at other places. However, I don't feel that angst anymore, because I've realized that in one sense, I'm just like any other generic middle-aged white preacher. You could just plug me in. I'm just like anybody else. I don't have that unique of a story. But more and more, I am realizing the uniqueness of my particular story, and it's this. My life is a testament to the power of planting in one location for the long haul. I read in a book years ago that we overestimate what we can do in 5 years and we underestimate what we can do in 30. And so I've made this decision with my life to plant in one place for a really, really, really long time. And I'm not saying it's the only way to do it, or even that it's the best way to do it. All I'm saying is that God produces a lot of fruit through people that stay put. And so here's my challenge for you this morning as we conclude here. I want to challenge you to plant here at the Memorial Road Church of Christ. Like, I want you to make this church your home. And what that means is that this means don't run away if it gets hard. Don't blame other people for your problems. Don't become a church critic. Don't jump ship just because you haven't found a best friend in your first 2 months. Plant. Show your perseverance. Plant at this church family. Find your people. Get your relationships. Find your Bible class. Get your Q group. Find your place that you're going to serve. And like, again, just what would your life look like if you did that for 6 years? Like, I don't know if you'd be wealthier, maybe, maybe not. I don't even know if you'd be happier, maybe, maybe not. But I do know you would look more like Jesus if you did that. Because if you meditate on the words of Jesus Christ, these incredibly unifying words for the next 6 years, you will become more like Jesus Christ, because the words of Jesus never return empty. And so I challenge you to plant here. So we're going to sing a song, and if you need to respond to this message in any way, I'll encourage you to come tell me about that. Let's stand and let's sing.